Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Hey, if you've got a friend that has a dog that's not in great shape, right? Maybe the hair looks all gnarly. He's got a lot of dander. His eyes aren't bright, overweight, limping around. Introduce him to Raw Dog Food and Company. Introduce him to the Raw Dog Food Truth. You don't have to try to convince them to go raw. Just ask them to come over and listen to the podcast because we cover a plethora of health issues, don't we, Dr. Jasek?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you, you know, I see over and over again just absolute transformations in dogs that come off the kibble and get them on the raw diets. And it's just, I mean, people are just blown away. How well their dogs do and how different they act and how much more energy they have. And, you know, even young dogs, you know, these poor young dogs that are, you know, over vaccinated and raised on a kibble diet. And they're like, they should just be bounding with energy. And they're just lethargic because their bodies are so inflamed and probably their immune system is impaired. And, you know, we put them on a raw diet and they just transform. I mean, yeah, outwardly you see the, you know, the coat improve, but, you know, the skin and hair coat is actually the last thing to improve. So all those nutrients and those great whole food ingredients are benefiting the internal organs because that's where the body sends the nutrition first. So by the time you see those results in the skin and hair coat, that the whole body, the whole dog is healthier and we're preventing disease and, you know, they're able to get out and enjoy life and run and hike and do all the things that dogs are meant to do.
Yeah. And don't be shocked. Don't be shocked if your vet acts like you have a, you know, leprosy, because that's what they do. Dr. Jasek, I've talked about it many times here on the podcast and in gosh knows you and I have so many customers that feed raw or are coming over from a traditional vet. And they say some of the craziest things I've ever heard. And I heard another one yesterday. So one of my customers had a dog that was simply vomiting, okay, vomiting for a couple of days. So they took him in. Well, the vets really couldn't find anything. They gave this dog antibiotics just in case. Didn't even have a bacterial infection. And, they put the dog on IV fluids. They decided to do a scan. The pet parent told me that they gutted, these were her words. They gutted my dog from the top to the bottom. They opened this dog up. Did all these ultrasounds, all these x-rays, and opened this dog up to the tune of $9,000. We hear this all the time, $10,000. But here was their final analysis. They said, well, since you're feeding a raw diet, we're seeing something on this ultrasound on the pancreas. We think it's this little bitty shard of metal. So we think it came from a KitchenAid that your raw dog food company is using. I said, a KitchenAid? Well, first of all, we don't make this stuff in our garage, okay? Right. These are giant commercial grinders, stainless steel, you know, food grade grinders. So I wanted to ask you, Dr. Jasek, how would that happen? How would some dog eat something, let's say that they even licked it up or whatever, how would that get in the pancreas? Is that possible?
No, it's not possible. Not possible. And a little tiny shard of metal besides is probably just going to pass through the dog. The digestive tract is, you know, it's a big long tube that starts in the mouth and it goes down to the anus. And the pancreas secretes enzymes into that tube, but it's completely separate from it. And, you know, the fact that the dog got better tells us that that isn't playing a role anyway.
My point here is, guys, that there are a lot of crazy things. There are a lot of crazy ideas that come out of the traditional veterinary world. And if you don't know any better, right, as a pet parent, you just take them on their words and you think that raw dog food's the worst thing in the world. And this is one of the reasons, Dr. Jasek, that censorship, as we see, is so prevalent right now, is so bad, holding down information. Can you imagine if they censored truth about food? Truth about food, for instance, everything that we've ever said here on the podcast, but just about, let's talk about, we're going to talk about cancer today. I want to talk about cancer because you're a cancer expert. I hear so many pet parents saying that their dogs are getting cancer at younger and younger ages. But here's something that I wanted to call to our pet parents' attention. If you didn't know what I'm going to tell you about carrageenan, and you ate carrageenan, and you didn't know that carrageenan, which is a thickener in a lot of pet foods, is a cancer-causing agent, don't you think you'd be ticked off? Don't you think that that would be dangerous? Aren't you glad that right now that there are some channels like this one that will still give you information, other sides of information, that we're not being squashed? Because we don't know, Dr. Jasek, we do not know how long it's going to be before we might be censored.
Right.
Carrageenan, I want to talk about this. People are constantly saying, look, my dog has cancer. All right, well, we don't know exactly everything that's causing cancer. We do know that bad food, over-vaccination, putting toxins in your dog's body is causing inflammation, which you just talked about. That is a precursor to all of these diseases. But carrageenan is an effective thickener and stabilizer found in processed pet foods. But they're not only in processed foods, they can be in some foods that appear to be raw. Okay, I'm just going to say it like that. You can find them in your local grocery store foods, or even your veterinarian's clinic.
Oh no, tell me it's not true.
But I'm telling you, this is not good. 70% of canned foods contain carrageenan. It's a food stabilizer. It's extracted from red seaweed, but it's even food grade carrageenan is known to cause intestinal inflammation and serious related diseases with the potential to lead to cancer, even in small doses. So we want to take a look at anything that you're feeding your dogs, anything that you're putting in your dog's body, turn it over and look at that label. If it says carrageenan, don't feed it. Do not feed it. It can cause gastrointestinal inflammation and cancer. So Dr. Jasek, there's so many things that are causing cancer out there. You were just talking about on the last podcast, lung cancer seems to be becoming more prevalent. Then we've got this bone cancer. Man, it's crazy. It's scary. But what I do love about what you do is that you don't take the traditional approach. And one thing I wanted to bring to the customers and the listeners' mind today is that there are alternatives to chemotherapy. There are alternatives to cutting open the dog. Are there any instances where chemotherapy or cutting some form of this cancer out of the dogs are successful?
You know, I don't see good results with conventional
intervention. What I see with surgery when we, well, we, I don't, but when more conventional veterinarians go in and start removing lumps, you know, there's this knee jerk reaction that, you know, we see a lump, let's get rid of it. And there's this assumption that that's treating the cancer. That lump is the tip of the iceberg. If we don't treat the disease systemically, and I've seen this over and over and over again, and you just start removing every little lump that comes up, or you start even doing needle aspirates, even just poking needles in them. I have seen these lumps blow up into way more serious conditions. And then once you do surgery in an area and that lump regrows, it's so much harder for the body to resolve it. Because I think part of that is there's a disruption in circulation just because they're trying to get good margins. And they go as deep into the surrounding tissues as they can to get good margins. And, you know, so that, you know, because then the cancer's gone, right? Well, it's going to keep showing up because there's always circulating tumor cells. And you see a tumor, if it's a malignancy, there's always going to be the cells from that tumor floating around in the body. And the more surgeries and the more interventions you do, the more likely it is to take hold elsewhere. And things like chemotherapy, you might see some short-term results, but the pets get so sick and so run down. And conventional vets don't even talk to people about diet. So not only are they getting a drug, the chemotherapy drugs that are so hard on the immune system, they're not even trying to support the body's natural healing ability. And so when that cancer comes back, and it always does, it just comes back with, you know, with a vengeance, you know, totally with a vengeance. And there's some cases where a tumor is so big, it's like really uncomfortable for the dog, or it's causing a problem with joint mobility, or some cases like that. There's some other extenuating circumstances where removal might be warranted, but these really radical surgeries, like, you know, like oral tumors, like we got a growth, you know, growing in the mouth. And these are really tough because when we have a malignancy growing in the mouth, they tend to be really aggressive. They get into the bone, and there's no good way to completely remove them unless they do things like jaw amputations. So, I mean, just think about, you know, having a dog and having like half of its lower jaw amputated. I mean, that's no quality of life. That's mutilation in my opinion. So I do not see, you know, good outcomes. I would say the only time I might see a benefit from a conventional intervention is if we have like a rapidly growing, like really invasive tumor. And sometimes like targeted radiation will help slow that tumor growth down and help the pet be more comfortable. But we have to be doing all the other stuff. We still have to be supporting the body with good nutrition and herbs and supplements and other things I do, like ozone and mistletoe and all of these alternative treatments to support the body's natural healing ability. And sometimes we can get the pet more comfortable, you know, for a while, but I don't believe that like that radiation, that's not preventing metastasis. It's not preventing the cancer cells from taking hold elsewhere in the body. It's just, it's making the pet more comfortable, especially if it's a aggressive, you know, very painful tumor. I always look at the pet's quality of life. If a pet has a growth, it's not bothering them, like they couldn't care less. And the poor dogs are like, what is all the fuss about? I am perfectly fine. Can't we just go for a walk or something? Like, why are you people obsessing over me? Like, they don't even know they're sick. Then I say, leave them alone and let's support leave the lump alone. And then we support the body with nutrition and some other supplements and things like that. And I think, you know, people do need to be aware that we live in a very toxic world, and there's a lot of things that are out of control. You can't completely protect your pet from glyphosate. I mean, I recommend avoiding any areas that are sprayed for weeds or sprayed for pesticides as best you can, but it is everywhere. There's, you know, things in the air that we don't have complete control over what's in our environment. So you have to control the things you can. And Aditi, you were talking about the carrageenan, and what that tends to do is it throws off the microbiome. Anything your pet eats is going to have an effect on the microbiome. Now we're hoping for that we're feeding things that are creating beneficial effects, and we're growing lots of really good beneficial bacteria in the gut. But anything that's processed or synthetic, especially, has the potential for throwing off that microbiome. And that's why I think things like the carrageenan can cause a gut inflammation, because it's affecting the microbiome. So there's a lot of things you don't have control over, but by God, you've got to be watching the things that you can control, and don't be putting, you know, toxic substances in your pet, you know, when you can avoid them.
Well, I thought about you as I was looking at this carrageenan and where some of the most common food sources are that have carrageenan in them. You don't like dairy in the dog's diet. And I'll tell you, some of the biggest places that carrageenan mm-hmm. is found: almond milk, coconut milk, hemp milk, rice milk, soy milk, kefir, cottage cheese, yogurt. Okay. And I know a lot of people that give their dogs yogurt, they give their dogs kefir, they give their dogs cottage cheese. So I thought, this is a great thing that you've gotten some pushback on. People love to give their dogs that dairy product, and you're like, hey, I don't like, you know, let's pull that out. It's not necessary. Why do we do that? Carrageenan, you guys, take a look at it. And here's the thing. FDA approves this. It just, you know, blows me away. I don't even look, Dr. Jasek, if the FDA has approved something or not, because they have totally, totally lost my trust.
You mean they don't have our best interest at heart? Our government, isn't looking out for us and making sure that we stay healthy.
They want the best for us, don't they? They approve Monsanto, they approve carrageenan, they approve all the colors and dyes. I just don't.
Because there's money, you know, because there's, you know, there's money in keeping people sick, you know, is kind of a bottom line there. Because if they just help people stay healthy, then how's Big Pharma going to make any money?
Well, right on. They're going to vaccinate all of us. That's how they're going to make money. Okay. So you are a cancer doctor. And so I want to talk about a couple of things that you use that I don't think that people are totally familiar with. And that's going to be the ozone therapy and the biophotonic therapy, which is light therapy, as I understand it. So how does ozone therapy work for a dog? Let's say a dog comes in, and before you answer that, let me ask this question. Do you feel that ozone therapy would work on any type of cancer, whether that be a lymphoma cancer, whether that be a bone cancer? Is ozone therapy going to be beneficial for any type of cancer?
Oh, absolutely, because it supports the body's natural healing ability. So what ozone does, so ozone is O3. The oxygen that we breathe in the air is O2. It's a very stable molecule. If you put, you know, obviously oxygen is beneficial, but if you just put oxygen into the body, it's really stable. It doesn't do as much to enhance the immune system. Ozone is O3, and it's a less stable molecule. And so when it gets in the body, it's very reactive. It doesn't, you know, the molecule doesn't like having that extra O there. So that extra O is very reactive. And basically it combines with other substances like lipids and proteins and forms these substances called ozonides. And those are what actually get in the cell. And once they're in the cell, they help the mitochondria produce energy more efficiently. So basically it's helping to improve the energy production, which makes cells healthier. It helps cells use oxygen more efficiently in the body. So whatever oxygen is there, because it's not that pets are necessarily deficient in oxygen because they're breathing, we're all breathing the same air, but the body, when the body's inflamed and cells are not functioning properly, the body can lose the ability to use oxygen efficiently. And the other thing is most all disease processes, whether it's bacterial, viral, or cancer mutations, they tend to thrive in a low oxygen environment because that's when the body is stressed. So the more oxygen we get into the body, we're keeping the body healthier and we're creating an unfriendly environment for these other processes to exist. And so it actually, ozone can be effective for anything. Bacterial infections, viral infections, other parts of the world, it's being used to treat COVID, just not in this country. So it can definitely help. You know, it's not a magic bullet. There are no magic bullets. When we're treating, holistically, we're using different things. You know, we come at it from all angles. I always use nutrition as my foundation. And matter of fact, I'll tell people, if say I had somebody come in that's feeding a kibble diet and they want to do ozone, I will probably tell them they're wasting their time with the ozone if they don't change the diet. They have to do that first. And then we can support the body with these other modalities. And I do see pets. I see them do so well with the ozone. It can really help. I mean, there's some patients I see, things are just so far advanced that we're just starting too far behind the ball. That does happen. But when I see pets earlier in the process, and especially pets that have had little or no conventional intervention, those are the pets that I have the best results with, the pets that have not had surgery and not had chemo and, radiation unnecessarily and things like that. Those are the ones that tend to do the best.
So this type of oxygen or ozone therapy, you can administer that in many different ways. There's a great article on your multimedia page on your website, ahavet.com. But if a dog were to come in and have, let's say, some type of bacterial infection, would you use an ozone therapy on them versus a traditional antibiotic?
Something. Yeah, I mean, ozone can definitely help. It depends on how sick they are. I have a little dog now that I'm treating that has a tumor in her bladder, but she also, they cultured her urine and she has this really resistant bacteria growing in there. And in order to treat it conventionally, she'd have to be put on this just really strong antibiotic. And so my response to that was, well, let's try the ozone and doing some other supportive things and see if we can help her body eliminate this infection without having to go the route of antibiotics that, could have really detrimental side effects. If we have like a really badly infected wound or something like that. I mean, ozone can be used topically, but you'd need to be doing it like every day. Like say you had a really badly infected wound, like a bite wound, and you could flush that with, you can actually ozonate saline too. So you can take, I have a saline bubbler. So you have sterile saline, you bubble the ozone into it, and you can use that to flush wounds. It's real effective, but you're going to need to be doing that at least once a day. And for most people, they can't make it in that often. And unless they wanted to buy their own generator, which I do have more and more clients doing that, buying their own ozone generators, we're probably not going to be able to treat it aggressively enough with the ozone. So then I would use, antibiotics And sometimes just for a few days. I see so many pets put on antibiotics for weeks. I mean, just from the get-go. It's like, okay, here's this antibiotic prescription. Your pet needs to stay on it for 6 weeks. In my experience, if there's truly a bacterial infection and an antibiotic is going to be effective, it's effective really fast, like 3 to 5 days. I would rarely recommend going longer than 5 days on an antibiotic. And if we're not seeing improvement, then we need to do something else. What I see in conventional medicine is like, oh, well, that antibiotic didn't work after a month. Let's put it on for another month. Like, isn't that the definition of insanity? You know, you're trying to get a different result doing the same thing. It's just craziness.
Yeah. What is the mindset behind, all right, I'm going to give you an antibiotic, even as a human being. And I want you to take, even if you see results in the first 3 days, I want you to take a full 14 days of this antibiotic. What is the mindset behind that? Are there certain life cycles of the cells or bacteria? Or why are we doing that for 14 days?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I think it's this, you know, well, if a little bit is good, then more is better. And if I think in conventional medicine, the whole idea that the body actually has healing abilities just gets completely overlooked, because the way I look at antibiotics, like say we truly do have a bacterial infection, we have an infected wound, or we have a pneumonia or something like that, that really warrants the use of antibiotics. I look at them more as a jumpstart. Let's just get this bacterial population under control so the body can kick in and do the rest. And a lot of times it can. And the longer, you know, we prolong a course of antibiotics, you know, we're adversely affecting the microbiome. We're damaging the gut. We're damaging the ability of the body to heal itself. So I usually go with a short course. And then of course, you know, we monitor and we do other things to help, so, you know, support the pet's body in finishing up the healing process. And in most cases, it totally can do that.
Because the whole idea is to remove the toxic foods, the toxic medications out of the body so that the body will begin to heal. And what you do is that you are supporting the parts of the body, the infrastructure of the body, so that they can come alive and be as strong as they can to heal themselves. This is such backwards thinking for so many people, right? We have been so conditioned to believe that these pills, these shots, these traditional ways of treating health is better. It's as if what you just said, the body has no idea how to heal itself. This body is an amazing machine if we get out of its way. Pet parents don't really understand what's going on. They can be swayed in so many ways. You've got this pet that you love dearly and they're not feeling well and you want to do the best. And I think only afterwards, maybe do you realize that there could have been a better treatment like ozone therapy, because this even ozone therapy, or as they call it, oxygen therapy. If you Google that, you're going to get a lot of opinions, just like you're going to get a lot of opinions about the raw dog food diet. But you have to talk to people that have been doing it, that have been in the business, that see the success, like you, Dr. Jacy. You can't talk to people that haven't been doing it and they just have an opinion about it. That drives me crazy. That drives me crazy. These you know, armchair doctors who want to give an opinion about something that they have no experience in at all.
You know, another comment I have about, you know, conventional medicine is really good at suppressing symptoms. So you could start your pet on medications. You know, see this so much with skin issues. You know, they're put on immunosuppressive drugs like Apoquil or prednisone, and the symptoms go away. Yeah, and that's great. But I'll tell you, when we, you know, take those dogs off of those medications, because if you're just suppressing the symptoms and you're suppressing the immune system, that's going to blow up on down the line. I've seen that many times too. You're going to end up with cancer or some other condition because you're not treating the underlying cause. When you start, when you have a pet that's had chronic inflammation and has been on these drugs, and all of a sudden you decide, well, I want to do something differently, and we pull them off of those drugs, this is a process. And a lot of times those pets will get worse before they get better. And you have to have some patience. This is not a quick fix. If you want a quick fix, then stick with conventional medicine. And, you know, because I see this a lot with clients, you know, if you're going to go a holistic route, you have to commit to it and stick with it. And there's going to be ups and downs, and there's going to be some experimentation, you know, what diet is right for that pet. And that might change over time too. And sometimes the symptoms will get worse before they get better. Cause it, you know, when pets are on these immunosuppressive drugs, you're keeping that immune system suppressed. All of a sudden you pull that out of there, and the immune system, it has to be re-educated as to what it's supposed to be reacting to. There's also, you know, an epigenetic factor where getting a pet on a whole food, fresh, raw diet will actually over time change the genetics. And genetically, that pet will become stronger. The immune system will become stronger, but that doesn't happen overnight. You know, we're talking months of treatment. And I see patients that, you know, they'll start with us and they're like, okay, this sounds really great. And then a few weeks into it, they're like, yeah, my dog's still itching or whatever their symptom is. And then they do the knee jerk back into conventional medicine. You can't mm-hmm. do it both ways. Mm-hmm. It is what I do is not going to work. If you're going to keep doing that knee jerk back into conventional medicine to suppress symptoms, you can't do it both ways. You have to commit to your course and commit to your pet. And, you know, and ride out all the changes. And we're willing to support people in that process. But when we outline a plan, what we recommend is best for that pet, and then they're researching on the internet, or they go back into their conventional vet, and then every couple of days, they're changing the routine, we can't help those people. So if you're going to start with us, you're just going to have to, you know, stick with the, it's not like we don't change our plan along the way. But you can't be doing that knee jerk back into conventional medicine. It doesn't work. And, we literally end up just moving those clients on because we can't help them. We really can't.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the Raw Dog Food Truth. Remember, spread this far and wide. Just tell all your friends with those dogs with problems to come over and listen to the Raw Dog Food Truth, where your pet's health is our business and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snaps.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.